Blog Talk Radio.
It's been a hard day's night, and I've been working like a dog. It's been a hard day's night, I should be sleeping like a log. But when I get home to you, I find the things that you do will make me feel
Yeah, it has been a long, hard day, a hard day's night, hard day's day, whatever you want to call it. But it's another signing day in the books for the UW, and it's the 15th signing day that I personally have covered on Real.com. So this is kind of a cool day for me. Let's go ahead and get into what we're going to be talking about here tonight, which is just basically going to be reviewing the class and talking a little bit about what's going to be going on in 2016, looking ahead, some of the news of the day. Lars is going to be calling in tonight. And if you just tuned in, this is Ruth Robbins, and I am the editor of RealDog.com, which is the Washington site on 247 Sports. So we are going to be here live for a while, and if you want to call in, that number is 888-409-6280. Again, that's 888-409-6280. And just a couple little quick announcements I wanted to tell some of our experts at 247 thanks for everything they've done this season and that they put out there today. You know, it's really kind of a cool thing being on a network like that because then you have access to things like the database and the rankings and especially our crystal ball feature, you know, those types of things. Plus, they have done a great job over the last few months in going ahead and filtering that news into RealDog.com and when they got it because of our Bolt feature too. We've got that platform as well. So I want to thank guys like J.C. Sherbert and, Kip Adams, Ryan Bartow, Barton Simmons, and of course our own Lars Hansen because he's just been a gem this year and has really been awesome. Plus, I also want to thank the parents of the recruits that we covered all year because they've been awfully patient and it's probably tough for them. I don't know because I had a girl, but I can imagine what they go through in having to deal with their son's recruitment and dealing with fielding calls and us in the media. So anyway, having said that, let's move on. Lars is going to be with us, and he's got a couple of things to report. We don't really have any guests on tap tonight just because it's kind of a tiring day for some of those kids. You know, I don't think a lot of them really want to yak tonight. They're kind of tired out, tuckered out. Been a long day for those guys as well. So Lars is going to come on, and, we're going to be taking your questions, too, on Twitter. If you want to log on there and check us out, it's at RealDog247. A couple things I wanted to go over. I was looking at these quotes of Coach Pete today from the press conference. He said some really cool things that I kind of maybe reading more into than that's there, but I don't think I am. You know, the more I listen to this guy talk, the more, I know you guys have heard this before ad nauseum, but the more it makes me think of Coach James. I know, go ahead, shoot me, I know. But I really mean that. And it's not wishful thinking by any means. It's a factual thing that this coach is more like him than any coach that Washington's had since he left. And so there's a lot of similarities there into the philosophy. And number one, you know, Coach Pete is all about development. Like I said in my article, he's about development. Give me any player, I will develop him. Well, not any player, but you know what I mean. I'm sitting here looking at something I have up on my wall in a frame. And it's a newspaper article that was written back in 1991, or actually came out in 92 because it was the end of the season, written by Blaine Newnham in the Seattle Times. And the big headline says 12-0. And it's got these pictures going all across it. One is Steve Entman and Mario Bailey and Orlando McKay and Coach James. And the name of the article is Building a Champion. And it goes through this whole 4-year cycle that Coach James went through, in which he put all these pieces together and built this championship team that he built. And a lot of people don't realize this, but if Washington hadn't gotten in trouble there with the Billy Joe Hobert scandal and everything that broke out at that time, they were on track to possibly win another national title that year. They were undefeated. They were number one in the polls. I mean, they were going great guns. So who knows what would have happened? Nobody knows. But, you know, as it was, things just kind of imploded, and you know, we all know how that turned out. But I went back and I read that article today, and it just really kind of gave me the shivers, because I heard so much of the same things being said that Coach Peterson said today in his press conference. So, you know, we'll talk a little bit more of that. I think we just got Lars on the line. Are you there, Lars?
Yes, I am.
How are you feeling? Better? It's not awful.
Oh, yeah, I'm feeling good. I'm feeling good.
Oh, you sound terrible. Maybe that's just me. Well.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, now, Lars, let me get into this really quick. Lars had a couple stories, one that he just posted. Tell us a little bit about the article you just put up on Real Dog. The guy has an enormous head and face, and that picture is, like, huge. So I can't really see what he looks like, but tell me a little bit about this guy.
Yeah, it's Michael Alves. He's a 6'5", 320-pound offensive guard out of St. Augustine High School in Southern California. Washington actually just started kind of, you know, feeling around him a couple weeks ago. And he's only got 3 other offers from Arizona State, Boise State, and San Diego State at this point. And Washington pulled the trigger early this afternoon. And he's another Jordan Pau-Pau guy. He's not looking at taking any unofficial visits, you know, right away. He's still trying to get acquainted with the process. But definitely a promising prospect. In Washington, I think they've offered 4 or 5 offensive tackles, but they haven't offered any interior linemen in the 2016 class that I can recall off the top of my head. And so he's one of their first, and definitely high on their list, you know, early in the process. But he's not a kid that's going to commit, you know, right away. He's going to go through the process, take his official visits, and go that route.
Now, I haven't had a chance to look at this film yet. Coach Pete was talking today about how they like these tall offensive linemen that are really athletic. And have you had a chance to check out his film at all? Does he kind of fit that description of what Coach Pete was talking about?
Yeah, he can move for a guy that's 320 pounds. I mean, he's, you know, interior, so he's not moving as much as a Trey Adams when he's outside.
Right.
But you can definitely tell he's got the ability to move. He's not a guy that's just going to sit there. You know, he's athletic for his size.
Uh-huh. And was there another guy offered earlier, or is this the same guy?
No, Chris Barnes was offered earlier today.
Yeah.
He's a linebacker out of Liberty High School in Bakersfield, California. Washington's been on him last 2 or 3 weeks, and his recruitment has really blown up. Boise State was the first school to offer him as his most chance. And then he blew up, and he got an offer from Oregon. USC offered him during their junior day. And, you know, Washington jumped on board today. So he's definitely a rising prospect. Definitely one to keep an eye on moving forward. He's still in the process of, you know, researching all the schools. He definitely wants to take an unofficial visit, but, you know, nothing's been set up. The only visit he has set up is April 4th to Boise State. So he'll probably get a couple more spring visits in, but, you know, he's definitely another kid that's just going to go through the process.
Well, and then you also mentioned, Lars, that there is another preferred walk-on that's coming in. What can you tell me about him?
Yeah, Jamon Jones, he's a 6'2", 6'3". He played quarterback and wide receiver for Bethel High School in Stanaway. I believe Washington is bringing him in as a wide receiver. You know, it makes the most sense. I don't, you know, because they're fine at quarterback. He's not gonna, you know, do anything there. So I think he's, you know, it's a preferred walk on spot. You know, it is what it is. You know, definitely he's got a lot of room to grow, honestly. So I wouldn't worry too much about him. But he does have the preferred walk on spot at Washington.
Cool. Well, for our listeners, there's a couple things going on as we sit here. One is the basketball game. The Huskies are playing Oregon, and they're behind. So there's shocker. I don't know if anybody's really tuning into that. I've got somebody else doing that now. It's kind of almost too miserable to watch, but it's out of the corner of my eye here. The other thing going on is the recruiting banquet at UW, which they have every year. They didn't actually have it last year because Coach Peterson's staff had just been hired. There just wasn't time. But they do this every year. Normally they have a recruiting banquet, and the coaches come and they introduce the they don't introduce the recruits in person. They introduce the class as a whole and talk about these guys because these coaches get this little window of opportunity and time here to actually finally be able to talk about these guys. And, it's like they're just busting because they can't talk about them all year. You know, they can't talk to the media. And so when they finally get that little time where it's okay to do that, they love to talk about it. So it's a lot of fun. I've been to a couple of the banquets as a guest, and I always had a really good time. So that's where the coaches are. And I think now Washington's playing at Oregon, so this is all going on probably at Heck Ed as far as I know, or in the Don James Center. It could be there too. I'm not sure. So anyway, that's kind of what's going on out there tonight. One thing I wanted to bring up here, and this is just kind of a weird thing, and if anybody wants to chime in on this and comment, I'd certainly like to hear their feelings on this. Because last night I brought this up about how, as fans, it's a good practice to not go on there and talk to recruits on Twitter and direct messages to them because the NCAA, it's a slippery slope. You shouldn't do that. However, there was an article today that came out in CoachingSearch.com in which Mike Gundy of Oklahoma State was actually putting some blame on fans' interactions with recruits on the internet for why players are flipping and decommitting from schools and going to other schools. And one of the quotes he says is, these fans who are contacting these players can affect the way they think. Really? Now, do you agree with that, Lars? I don't think I really agree with that very much. What do you think on that?
No, I mean, from what I've seen from most recruits, they just say thanks, the most that really happens is, they'll say, where are my Husky fans at? Where are my Cal fans at? Whoever they have offers from. And I think, Marshall, it was one of the bigger recruits. He put on Twitter, he said, okay, the fans get to pick my last official visit. I don't buy that, but he actually let the fans decide. But, it's just kind of one of those, attention things. It's for fun. And I don't think, there's some coaches that say, oh, there's too many people involved, et cetera, et cetera. But that's just the way it is. That's the day and world you live in. But it's not like some kids are going to say, ooh, this guy said thanks, congrats on the offer. Now I want to go here versus another school. There's no recruit that's going to go up and say, hey, I'm going to commit to this school because these fans said, congrats, thank you, come to our school, It's not like that. Now, if you want to say that not the parents, but kind of the other people involved in recruiting, so I don't want to make it sound like agents or anything like that, but there's the other people right around that have more influence than coaches do, or as much as coaches do. And, those are the people that coaches need to be more focused about and be more worried about, because they actually will influence kids versus some fans saying, hey, come to Washington, come to USC, that's two different things.
Well, granted, like I said, it's a given that fans still need to avoid doing that. But at the same
time,
to actually believe that would encourage a recruit to change his commitment status. And having said that, let's look at what Coach Pete said today when he talked about how he's able to keep his class together up until signing day. And he said, last year, okay, Jalen Green was one little flip-flop, but that was it. And he said this class, this year was more they had the whole year to recruit. And he said, we're getting back to what we're used to doing as a staff, what they did at Boise and whatnot. But he said, I don't think it's a secret. I think it's how recruiting should be done. We don't put pressure on these kids at all. This shouldn't be a high pressure thing. It turns out because the kids have choices. Our whole thing is not to sell anybody. We believe strongly in what we're doing, but we don't want to have to sell anybody. This is who we are, and these are the guys we're looking for. If you're about these things, which we really think you are, then that's when the magic happens. And he goes on to say, we've always recruited like that. It doesn't mean you don't have some last-minute things now and then, but for the most part, this is how it should be. It should just be kind of matter-of-fact. There's so much drama in the old days just because nobody really knew everything. And, you know, he talks about how, you know, there's no secrets anymore because of the Internet. And, but, you know, so you have one coach over here saying, you know, we blame the Internet. And you have another coach saying, you know, no problem. We just do what we do, and we succeed at doing it. So I just kind of wonder, you know, it just, I don't know. For some reason, that just kind of struck me as an interesting little footnote to everything that went on today. You know, and as far as, you know, what I was talking about when we started, when I was referencing Coach James, and I know it's very cliche to do that, but, you know, we talk about player development. You know, why is it that we believe that Coach Peterson is going to succeed where maybe Coach Sark never got to? Obviously, Coach Willingham failed. Coach Gilbertson failed. Coach Neuheisel didn't really fail, but I don't think that he was a mature enough coach yet to do what he needed to do in order to continue on in that elite status. Coach Lambright had his struggles. You know, what are the reasons, what do you think, Lars, are the reasons that possibly Coach Peterson could succeed where other coaches didn't succeed between now and 20 years ago when Don James was here?
Well, I mean, if we're comparing Peterson to Sark, it's almost an unfair advantage because Peterson had the head coaching experience that Sark never did. And some coaches
yeah.
are better coordinators, some coaches are better recruiters than they are coaches. And Peterson, mm-hmm. I don't want to say he doesn't recruit. He lets his staff recruit him and he closes. He still shows interest.
Yeah.
He still makes the calls throughout the year. But he lets his past and his presence speak for himself. And that's, I think,
yeah.
one of the big differences is he knows what he has to offer. He doesn't have to go and say, hey, you know, if you come here, you know, we'll be great. He just knows, hey, look, if you come here, it's a great opportunity. If you don't, so be it, you know. He doesn't have to put on a fake facade like, you know, some other coaches do that have less experience.
Well, and I don't think he puts as much emphasis on trying to get all the stars. Now, he made a couple funny little quips today. He asked how many five-star players were playing in the Super Bowl last Sunday, and it was like, you know, a zero. And maybe a handful or so of four stars. So, you know, I think he's a guy that just doesn't, you know, he reminds me of a coach that just doesn't let outside stuff get to him. He just doesn't care. He's so focused in on what he knows works and what his way is the way, you know. And so I don't see him being pushed and pulled by whatever, you know, the media might be saying, and I've seen that. I've seen that in coaches over the years. I've seen them, you know, bend a little bit to try to make people happy. Now, I think a good example of that was this year. He did not give up on Siler when a lot of people were giving up on Siler. He said, no, I'm going to stick with him. He stuck with the suspension of Siler. He didn't back down on that either. So I just think that in that way, you know, you can call him stubborn, I guess, and set in his ways, but you know, coaches that have got a winning percentage and are stubborn and set in their ways, they're going to get it done. So, anyway, that's that. Now, looking ahead, and I wanted to point this out, too. Everybody's just going, ooh, and ah, you know, over UCLA and USC's classes. They always get good classes. I don't know why this is some big news. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that USC and UCLA are always going to have really good recruiting classes. So, and I'm not taking away from what they did, obviously, but I'm just saying this is not anything new. It's just the way it is. I was surprised that Arizona didn't finish a little higher. Somebody pointed that out on the board. They said they finished 42nd in the country. What do you suppose is going on down there, Lars? I mean, I thought Rich Rodriguez had a pretty decent season, but you think there's some trouble in Denmark down there?
Well, I mean, their season, their record is not indicative of their actual season. I mean, they shouldn't have lost to Washington. They really proved they shouldn't have even been in the Pac-12 title game. And yeah. I think a lot of recruits are saying that. And, you know, when you have the option of going to a program that, you know, Remy Rickrell has done great in his time at Arizona. There's no doubting that. They've improved. But eventually, you know, just because you have a good looking record doesn't mean you actually have a good record. And, you know, there was a lot of times last year when you could see his guys on offense and defense were just dead because of the way
yeah.
he runs his offense. And so, you know, some kids prefer to, you know, run 90 to 100 plays, and some kids say, you know, hey, I'm good. Thanks.
Well, it's funny because if you turn the opposite, when you say his record isn't indicative of what Coach Target was, our record's not indicative of how well we played. Sorry, I had to throw that in. But now, did you go over to did you see Leach today at WSU?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I did.
Because you were tweeting about it. How was that? I mean, it kind of seemed like there was a little bit of tension there, or how was that?
It was interesting. I mean, you know, Leach is Leach, and he's got his own way of carrying himself, and you know, that's, no one's ever going to change him from that. But I think, you know, the way Washington State finished over the last 48 hours, when they lost at least 7 recruits, and they lost a fair amount more, but even before that in total, and I think Andy Rudinsky, who at one time was actually considering Washington before they dropped him, He signed with Dartmouth over Washington State.
Good
and
Lord,
so
where's he from?
He's from, oh wow, why is this escaping me?
Is he from this region? I mean, from California or?
Yeah, and he's a, he was still committed as of last night. He didn't decommit or anything. He just, on Saturday, he didn't put in his letter of intent. He's from Oaks Christian High School in Westlake Village.
Jeepers creepers. That's, you know, I don't want to see anybody, you know, obviously fail, and I certainly don't want to watch WSU fall into the cellar. I mean, that's just, you just don't want to see that. You want to see this region, the Pacific Northwest schools, you know, be successful, because that, you know, you got California, then you've got the Arizona schools, and now you've got the mountain area with Utah and Colorado. You know, obviously you want to see this part of the country, or this part of the Pacific Northwest, where the Oregon and Washington schools do well. I mean, I don't, you know, some of the funnest years watching Husky football was when, you know, the Apple Cup would mean, you know, the Rose Bowl. I mean, so I don't want to see that, obviously, but at the same time, it just seems like there's a lot of just craziness down there. It just seems like there, I don't know, you know, what, I mean, I don't know. I really thought Coach Leach would have a lot more success down there by now, you know?
Well, one of the major things in this class was Coach Simmons. He was rumored to go to Oklahoma for the longest time, and all the guys that he had committed, that he recruited, slowly started decommitting, and yet no official announcement was made until today. When Leach was asked at the press conference if Simmons was going or staying, he said, oh, no, he's going. And he decided just recently to make that decision. And so, you know, that did play a part into it. But, you know, when you tell your recruits and kids that commit on a visit that you have a defensive coordinator named, and then 2 months later you actually make a hire, it's kind of troubling.
Yeah, I can see that, you know. Well. Just a little update here. I guess Washington's gone ahead in the game against Oregon for now. So I can't see the score, though, what exactly the score is. But they're back on top, so we'll see what happens there. You know, they've kind of fallen into the troubled times there with their basketball team. And, you know, this brings up a good point I wanted to make, too, is I spoke to somebody the other day who's pretty inside, and for those of you who are questioning Lorenzo Romar's tenure and whether or not, oh, my gosh, you know, is Romar going to still be the head coach after this year if things go wrong? Yeah, he is. He's got a really high buyout, so I don't see him going anywhere anytime soon. And I was wondering too, Lars, now, you know, we haven't been super aggressive on our basketball coverage, but you were pretty close to covering Upshaw's recruitment. Do you know what really happened there with him?
The best way I can put it without completely revealing his issues is when you have substance abuse struggles, which is the reason why he was dismissed from Fresno State. You know, I know he, for the last couple of months, he was doing okay personally. He was on the right track, but he knew literally every day that it was a struggle. And eventually when, you know, you keep trying to, you know, tell yourself that everything's good, and, you know, something goes wrong, then you just completely fall off the wagon. And sadly for him, that's what happened. You know, he wasn't even sure. It was a while back when he actually, after he had to sit out the first season here, he actually wasn't sure if he was going to make it to this season. And he told Romar that. He told Romar that, and Romar still stuck with him. And, you know, he was in, I think he was in Idaho for a while, too, trying to, you know, get in shape and kind of get his mind right and be away from the team. And, you know, Romar was working with him. Romar bent over backwards for him. And eventually, you know, you can only bend over so far before you have to, you know, stand back up and say, okay, you know, I tried, but, you know, we got to do something else.
Yeah. Well, that's too bad, and I don't like to hear that. You know, I hope he lands on his feet. I hope he gets, if he needs to get some help for whatever it is, if he has some sort of addiction problem, I do hope that he gets some help, because, you know, he's such a talented kid and he's got so much potential. You know, I was saying on the message board the other day, you know, it's easy for fans to sit there and go, oh, you know, well, that guy was just, you know, he was just a drug addict, and so what, you know, this is a serious problem with young people, and just because they're athletes doesn't mean that they're immune from having problems like that. And so, you know, it's not a laughing matter. I don't like to see fans make fun of athletes who struggle with things like that, because, gosh, you know, everybody's struggling. I mean, it's a tough world that these kids are trying to live in, and, you know, there's just a lot of stuff thrown at them. So I don't like to see anybody be made fun of. I guess the Huskies right now have a 1-point lead, or no. Yeah. Oh, it's tied up. Oregon tied them up at 55 apiece. So we'll see what happens there. I'm going to take a little break right now, and I'll be back in just a minute, and we'll continue talking about the day's events. Oh, here's one of our favorites. Yeah. Song is kind of annoying in a way, but it's kind of fun. Some of this music nowadays I just don't get, but I'm just becoming an old geezer, I guess. So let's look ahead at 2016. Let's talk a little bit about that. In light of how they signed today, I mean, have we even thought about, you know, they didn't use those three scholarships. So those will probably go forward now. Unless, I mean, have you heard anything? I sure haven't heard anything, but has there been anybody in the walk-on program that's just really stood out that might actually earn a scholarship this spring?
Not from last year that I can think of. I mean, I'm trying to think. I know Ralph Kinney looked pretty good in spring ball.
He's done a good job.
I'm trying to think. I can't off the top. I know Ralph's done a good job, but other than that, I can't think of anyone else off the top of my head.
I was trying to remember now. Is Michael Knipe, is he on scholarship?
Michael's a walk-on.
Where am I? Okay, what
Michael's
about
a
him?
I think Knipe could. Morgan Ritchie could be another one, but I don't think, you know, I don't think they're at that point yet with either of those two. They could, depending on how they do in spring and fall ball, but I wouldn't say at this point it's like a guarantee.
Okay, so the Huskies and Ducks are tied at 58 right now, and I think there's about, about 8 minutes or 8.5 minutes left in the second quarters or second half. So now it's, they're just going back and forth. And I, like I said, I feel like I'm a jinx. When I really start really paying attention to the game, it's like they just totally collapse, and so I'm not going to jinx them by spending too much time on it. I was going to tell you too. We've got a young lady who's going to be taking the intern, and I went with a gal this time, and she's a student at UW, and so I'm going to be getting her trained and ready to go, and I think she's going to work out really well. Now, Lars, have we really had a chance to really sit down and go over the numbers? Now, there was a lot of linebackers, a lot of D linemen in this class this year, and I think, didn't you say last night that next season is going to be about receivers more?
Yeah, they have They have over a dozen offers to wide receivers. Actually, no, they're at a dozen, it looks like, at this point. I know they're serious about at least five or six of them. I know they like Tyler Barnes a lot out of Bishop Vermont High School. Stephen McKnight is very high on Washington out of Mira Meza. Javon McKinley is another one out of Centennial High School that they're really high on. And, you know, those are the kind of the main three. I know Theo Howard out of Westlake wants to take a visit as well. So, you know, Washington is definitely – you know, I think literally every single wide receiver they could sign in the 2016 class could be a 4-star, because so far that's all they have offers for, and they're in great shape for a fair amount of them. So it would be very surprising to see them not take at least two to four 4-star wide receivers.
That's amazing. You know, I mean, here Coach Pete's talking about how, you know, they don't really count the stars. They don't care. But, you know, they're recruiting these guys. And I think these were guys they recruited when they were Boise, too. And I remember Benafa saying that they're still recruiting like they did, but it's easier to get guys to come look at Washington because they're Pac-12 than it was to look at Boise. And so I don't think they're doing anything different necessarily in who they're going after. They went after big-time guys when they were at Boise. So this whole thing about, well, Coach Pete's not going to know how to recruit the Pac-12. Well, obviously he does. You know, this is not some big shocker when you think about it. I mean, he's doing exactly what he's always done. But he's got a little something better to sell, you know.
Well, I think it's easier for him now I think in the beginning he was like, okay, I still have to get those kind of, you know, diving in the rough guys. And then he realized,
right,
wait, a lot of these guys that we were thought of as dreams at Boise State are now reality at Washington. And so we have a lot of a chance at them. And so it's like, well, we can still recruit some of the diamonds in the rough, but you're going to have a lot more higher-rated guys and, you know, guys that you will still have to coach up but are already at a higher level.
Yeah. Well, I like what they're doing. I definitely like what they're doing. And I just you know, I don't want to keep going back to Coach James. I know people get sick of that. You know, I guess to the point where it's like, okay, enough. I've heard enough about Coach James. How many years ago was that? Well, for somebody my age, it was just didn't seem like a couple years ago, you know. So it doesn't seem that long ago to me. I suppose for younger people who haven't really had, you know, gotten to see Washington elite on a consistent basis during their lifetime, sure. I mean, I understand that they're kind of tired of hearing about Coach James, but for those of us who actually lived during that era, it wasn't much different. You know, it just really wasn't. It was always UCLA, USC, and Washington. And you know, Oregon had some decent teams back then too. I mean, they weren't bottom of the pack by any means. Cal sometimes had good teams. They had a really good team back there in the early 90s as well. And occasionally Stanford, you know, every few years would produce something really good and strong. So it was just as competitive back then. The games changed. You know, things have changed, athletes have changed, but the parity is still there. You know, I mean, back in the 90s, Oregon went to a Rose Bowl. Arizona State went to a Rose Bowl. So there was parity back then. You know, Washington State had that Rose Bowl season with Ryan Leaf. So it's not like, you know, that's changed. But I know that for people of the younger generation who didn't really remember that era, that it would seem different. Now, the irony of the whole thing with this 1991 team in this newspaper article I was referencing earlier is that one of the funniest, I'm sure Oregon fans would really appreciate this, but one of the most ironic, I'm going to walk over here and read this little paragraph. It was Rich Brooks who said, and he was the coach at Oregon back then, he said, let me see if I can find that quote. I got to find it. He had talked about how he felt that Washington team was the best he'd ever seen in college football. And this was from Rich Brooks at Oregon. No wonder they didn't want him to be their coach. But that was just an amazing, amazing football team. And, you know, that team didn't really have the big stars that you'd think they had. I mean, obviously Steve Atman was a big star. But you know, they didn't have some great big All-American running back or receivers or even the quarterback. You know, they just worked really hard. Were you surprised at all today, Lars, to hear Coach Pete talk about Jake Browning and Kalen Moore in the same sentence as he did?
No, because, you know, that's inevitable. I mean, Pete basically hung his hat on Kalen Moore at Boise State, and there's no way around that. And Jake, you know, the only difference in Kellen and Jake is Jake's taller. Jake is coming in with a little more fanfare. They do have, you know, they do have similar styles, but I mean, it's a lot different because Kellen was himself, and Jake is himself, and people gotta, you know, stop. Every time Washington gets a new quarterback, they're gonna be like, oh, is this guy Kellen Moore? Is this guy Kellen Moore? And it's almost like when Washington signed Dante Pettis last year and Peterson went right back to his brother, who he coached at Boise State as well. And it's like, you know, he's like, I try not to see the similarities, but it's hard not to.
Yeah,
and that's just
natural.
But, you know, I think Jake will be a good quarterback, but, you know, to say he's Kellen Moore, you know, it's two totally different things because, you know, tackleovers – Out West and back in the day, and it's all different. But they're both good quarterbacks.
Well, don't we do that a lot though in football? I mean, are we just, you know, it's kind of like art. You say, well, that song reminds me of that, or you watch a movie and you say that person looks like so and so. You know, we do that in football. Everybody does that. I mean, all the sports broadcasters do that. They're so superstitious, saying, well, you know, remember when they were down by this and they came back and, you know, so I think it's a natural thing to constantly compare players. But, you know, the thing about it is that there are similarities, and you can't dismiss that with the way that Coach Pete recruits a quarterback, because yes, he does hang his hat on that. That was his standard. I think that was his benchmark as a coach, to have a quarterback like that. So naturally, I think he's going to go out and look for guys like that. You know, wouldn't you agree? I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with that necessarily.
No, there's nothing wrong with that. But it's more or less for, you know, it's the easiest thing. It's like Peter. It's like everybody in Coach James at Washington. You know, when Sark was like, oh, I'm gonna try and be like Coach James and stay here forever,
right,
which everyone knew was not true.
You
know, there's always – whoever was the greatest is whoever is going to be compared to. And Kellen Moore was clearly his best quarterback at Boise State, and, you know, rightfully so.
Right. Well, yeah. And what about What about KJ? Let's talk about KJ Carter-Samuels. Do you think he has a chance to really rise up this year? That's going to be a big debate going into the spring. Is he going to take over that starting job?
Well, I know the coaches like him a lot. And, I mean, granted, it's practice, but the staff prides a lot of what they do on practice. You know, if you don't – that was the thing with Brandon Beaver this year. He was supposed to prove it in practice, and then he was supposed to prove it on special teams, and then if he really wanted to play, he would get a chance at safety. But he had to go through those first two steps too. And I think, you know, with the fact that, you know, KJ fits what they want to do, he's a good prospect when he came in, and he's given them no reason not to. And the reason, the most annoying thing that I heard is when people said, oh, well, if KJ is so good, why wasn't he playing last year? I'm like, well, he was a true freshman, and you have Tyler Miles, Jeff Lindquist, Troy Williams. You have those three ahead of him. Let's just picture that for a second. There's no way that Peterson can justify starting in his first year a true freshman quarterback midway through the season. There was no point in burning his red shirt when he didn't even know. He had to at least find out what he had in Siler and Jeff and Troy.
Right.
Now he's seen a whole year of them, and Troy's gone.
But, you know, you've seen coaches do that, though. I've seen coaches just throw caution to the wind. I mean, look at what happened at Cal. I mean, Sonny Dykes threw a true freshman in there, and Jared Goff, I think he's going to be a really good quarterback. I think he may be in a couple more seasons off because I don't think they have the offensive line to really get it done up front for him. But I think he's an excellent quarterback, but they threw him right into the fire as a true freshman. But the problem is that they basically sacrificed their season in doing that. And so that's the thing. I mean, if Coach Pete had really wanted to be a weirdo, and I'm not saying Sonny Dykes is a weirdo. I don't think he had that much depth at quarterback. But, I mean, he could have just done that, but fans wouldn't have liked that either. You know, you put the guy in that gives you the best chance to win, and that's the bottom line. And at that point, Siler was the guy that gave Washington the best chance to win. And Jeff Lindquist, and I'm still trying to figure out what went wrong there because I really thought he was going to do better.
He's got a great ball from midfield to the end zone. He's got a great Hail Mary ball, but you know he's got to work on the rest of his game. And you know, I mean, he is a good runner. When they put him in the packages that he ran, they worked pretty well. But that's all he is. He's a niche quarterback. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's a use for that.
Yeah. Well, it is what it is, and the fact of the matter is that these were not Coach Pete's guys, bottom line. You know, they were recruited for a system that has changed. No matter what anybody says, it has changed. And, you know, I think it's still going to be up-tempo, but I just think that Coach Pete's system is different, and it's going to be different. But, you know, and that's the big but. My question is this. Is it that the running backs – need help, or is it that they were not getting the blocking this season that they needed to get because of the offensive line? And so you and I have debated this over and over and over again. What do you see going forward in spring as far as the running back competition now that they didn't get Chris Warren and they have to go forward with what they have? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that'll be interesting. I always thought that LeVon Coleman was the best tailback that they had, like a true tailback, if you want to go based on a number one. And I still believe that. You know, when he got the chance to go last year, I think he proved pretty well. But last year they wanted to go with more of a rotation. And Dwayne Washington is what I said he was. He hit a bunch of home runs. He hit a bunch of long runs.
He did.
And he got, but he, you know, if – I like that every down, back in a first down, second down, bring Washington in on third down. And, you know, give the ball to Coleman the first and second down and maybe even third down and switch it up every now and then. But, you know, I think they'll probably still go Washington and Coleman kind of splitting those two. I think Deontay Cooper will still be in there because I know he's coming back and he said after this year he's not sure because he does have a couple more years left, ironically enough.
He's going to be like a 12-year senior.
Yeah, pretty much. And then, I mean, you know, Jahmyr Dotson's still a ways away from, you know, truly, you know, being ready to actually, you know, carry the load. So I think they can go with a three-back system and maybe, you know, maybe Miles Gaskin now, maybe this is his chance to, you know, say, hey, maybe I can beat out Dotson, because Gaskin is definitely more of the Coleman, you know, every down back kind of guy. And then it'll be interesting to see what they do with Chico McCutcheon, who I think they classified as a wide receiver today, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
I could be wrong. But
they did classify him as a receiver.
But he can easily play it, you know, kind of like that old Kendall Taylor model of the, you know, he could be a running back. He could be kind of like a, you know, quick back, you know, Deontay Thomas kind of thing. Could be split out wide.
Like a little scat back, yeah.
Yeah.
I'd sure like to see Troy Joyner on offense, though. Dang it. when I saw him run, man, during the season, you know, he's got such a low center of gravity. I mean, his lower body strength is so good. And, he, you know, Coach Pete talked about, you know, sure, he's a great athlete, but he just plays with so much grit and so much heart. And, you know, I'd love to see him at tailback, but I know that, you know, he wants to play corner and, you know, but it'll be interesting. Fall camp is going to be really interesting this year because they've got some guys coming in that are fast, you know, scat back, running back types, and it'll be interesting how they're able to use these guys because I really think that those guys are going to get in there early. You know, I see a guy like Chico on returns because he's so freaking fast, you know.
You can just put Chico back there and let them have at it.
Oh, good Lord.
That would be great to see.
That's scary. I mean, talk about the Legion of Zoom. You know, I know these guys like to say that, but there's a lot of speed back there, you know. So I'm going to take about a one-minute break here, folks. I'll be right back. Just kind of wet my whistle, and I'll play some Muse for you. Now that we're back, I wanted to let's touch on some of our hits and misses today. Obviously, you know, Chris Warren, I'm not going to say I told you so, because that, you know, that was a disappointment to a lot of people, and I understand that. You know, I mean, you know me, I'm not buying the coin flip thing. I know, I'm just not buying it. I know a lot of people are, and that's fine. I don't buy it, but you know, I don't know.
I do think it was still very close. I don't think it was, you know, think he's, you know, he could have gone one way or the other, but you know, I still, it definitely wasn't an easy one for Texas.
No, I don't think it was either. I think it was really hard for him. I think he really, truly respected and admired Coach Pete, and I think that if he could have put them all together in the right package, he would have loved to have played for Coach Peterson. But, you know, it is what it is. But other hits and misses, let's see. Where did Jalen Hawkins wind up? I went off and was not paying attention when that came down. Where did he went to Cal?
Yeah, which explains his recruitment.
Yeah.
I remember when I talked to him, he said he was that was someone else. But I think, you know, Hawkins recruit, there's so many schools that dropped him that, you know, I mean, recruits don't ever own that a school dropped you. But if you look at his recruitment, the way it went, when he tried to pass off Oregon and then he tried to, you know, say that he was still considering Washington, I think, you know, Washington probably would have taken him. But, you know, they weren't actively.
No.
They were ready to say, you know, okay, thanks, but no thanks, you know.
This isn't a
Calby Washington kind of thing. This isn't anything like that. Because, you know, I mean, I'm sure, you know, some fans could say, oh, we beat Oregon for him too, but you know, that's not how it is.
But
oh, no,
you
it
know,
isn't.
I think
and,
you know,
and he talked a lot about Oregon, and then from what I understood was that Oregon was gonna pass too, that they were not really actively pursuing him. So you know.
Yeah, they weren't even when he said he was still going to take his official visit, like 2 weekends before the actual visit. They had already dropped him then, so he was never going to take that visit. And I think, you know, a lot of what Washington does is they don't force kids to commit at all, but, you know, there's a couple of kids that they brought in early on, and I know Hawkins came in, you know, kind of late in the season, but they'll bring a kid in, and if it's not happening within the next couple of weeks, they kind of move on, and that's what they did with Anthony Camargo, that's what they did with Dedrick Young, and guys like that, mm-hmm. where, you know, they'll put, you know, the hat on the table and say, hey, I'm deciding between these schools, when in reality it's, you know, maybe one or two schools and not all four.
Yeah.
Kind of like Bar Milo when he said he picked Miami over Washington and Washington wasn't even recruiting him.
Yeah, I always like it when they do that. I'm trying to figure this out, too. I'm looking at my crystal ball page, and it has Chris Warren, and it shows that I picked him to Texas, but then it says result Oklahoma State. And that's actually hurting my crystal ball average, so I don't know why that's like that. Obviously, I whiffed on Micah Tafua. I should have changed that in the crystal ball because I started thinking he was going to stay at BYU. You know, and sometimes that happens with us with our crystal ball predictions. We make a prediction, and something happens, we forget, we don't go in and update, and then it hurts our average. So how'd you finish on your crystal ball? My average dropped way down to, like, mine was like 56.52%.
I'm looking it up right now. Well, I know I predicted Malik Palms to flip from Cal to Washington because Washington was really high on him over the summer, and he was really high. And what actually happened with that is Washington wanted him to decommit before he visited, and he didn't want to decommit, and so they just went their separate ways.
Right.
I finished 40 out of 62 for 64%.
Well, that's good. You made more guesses than I did. I got Quentin Meeks right on Stanford. I whiffed on who did I whiff on? I whiffed on Jalen Hawkins, obviously. Now, this says result Utah. I don't get this. Why is this like this on my crystal ball? They must need to update this because it says Utah. That's really hard, too. Yeah. Even though if you go to his profile page, it says Cal. So it may just be a little funny little glitch. But I whiffed on Joseph Wicker. I had him to UCLA, and he didn't go there. But,
yeah,
but you know, I mean... That's kind of surprising to me, too. Kind of wondering what went on there. Maybe UCLA just didn't really, I don't know, because he seemed like he really liked them a lot. Now, who was the other one that I thought was going to go to UCLA? Oh, man. I can't even think right now. It was brain fart. If I think of it, I'll tell you. But there was somebody else that I thought, oh, Deshaun Holliday. Now, did he go to UCLA?
Yes.
Okay, I didn't see that on there. I thought I'd pick that for him, but I don't see that either. So maybe this page just needs to be updated. But you know, all in all, I think this is a really good class. I really do. I think this is a needs class. I think that they hit the needs, the linebackers especially. That was a big need for them, you know. And I think that they really hit the nail on the head with some of this D-line recruiting. You know, me. I'm a defense person. You know, more linebackers, more D-linemen, and that's, to me, that's what's going to win a championship. But, you know, and it was funny today to hear Coach P talk about A.J. Carty and how valuable he is, even though he's going to gray shirt. So I guess that would leave, is it Ivan Mazel, who's still going to be long snapping this next year, or is he?
Ryan's still on scholarship for this year.
Is it Ryan or Ivan?
Yeah.
Why do I think
Ryan. Ivan was
Ryan?
The old strength conditioning coach.
Okay.
Ivan Lewis was the old strength. Yeah, because Ryan will be a senior this year, so he'll graduate after this year. And then the only other long snapper they have is a walk-on from a day. So odds are, you know, it'll be Cardi's gig for the next 4 years after that.
Here I am preaching about how important the long snapper is, and I don't even remember what the name of the guy is. It's the long snapper. Oh, well, I guess Oregon and Washington are tied up again, and it's coming down to the wire. Interesting game. You know, some of this is, like I said, this particular broadcast, some people aren't going to listen to it till later, and that's fine. But I just wanted to get on her tonight because, you know, this was kind of a crazy day, and it wasn't that crazy, but it was pretty much as expected. And even Coach Pete said, he goes, you know, it was kind of anticlimactic, but he said, I like it that way. And I got to tell you, you know, this really was a rather easy signing day as a reporter, you know, as a person that does this and who's done it for 15 years. This was actually a real relief. You know, all I had to do all day was just sit and, you know, get things retweeted and put on the board and write a couple articles, and it was just very nice. So, you know, I don't know if it's going to sell a lot of subscriptions, but at the same time, it's kind of nice to get a break from some of that drama that we've had in recent years. You know, I'll never forget that. Now, this was long before your time, Lars, but it was a 2002 class, and I was covering it, and that was when Stanley Daniels flipped from Nebraska on signing day to Washington. And I actually had the exclusive on that, and it was just like, it just blew up. I mean, the internet just blew up. And I'll never forget because I saw somebody on the Dog Man board, and somebody says, "Well, Ruth just said that Stanley Daniels is signed with Washington." And one of the Flamers came on there and goes, "Well, she lied. It's not true." And it was true. So, you know, there's been some crazy things on signing day in the past that were just heart stoppers, you know. And this was just really a calm, smooth experience, and I'd be willing to take this from here on out. We'll be looking ahead. Now, what do you think about this opener of Boise? I'm just not comfortable with that. Do you think that Washington's at a place yet? I mean, I know we're talking way early here, but do you think they're at a place yet where they can actually go down there and win on that blue field? I mean, I know Coach Pete knows how to play there, but gosh, Boise's he built that thing down there. I mean, he started something down there. Now he's got to go against his own. You know, his own creation that he started, and I'm a little nervous about that.
I mean, it should be a good game. It's not going to be a blowout, but for either side. But I think, you know, I don't think Washington will really have that much trouble with it. No, I mean, like, I can't imagine. It's not like when they're going to LSU to start off the first couple games of the season. When you know when you're going down to you know Baton Rouge and you're gonna hope to just hang in and not lose every player you have.
Yeah, right. Well, it's going to be interesting. My husband was walking around here bemoaning that a couple of weeks ago. He goes, man, I wish they could take that off the schedule or move it or something, you know. But I suppose that's where you find out what you're made of. But let's check in here and see what the score is with the Washington-Oregon game. 16 seconds and Oregon's up by 2 points. So we'll see. You know, it's just hard to, I don't know. This basketball team right now, I think, is just kind of, I think they're a work in progress. And I'm kind of disappointed that Nigel Williams-Goss hasn't had a better season than he's had. Well, I'm going to wrap it up, Lars. I appreciate you coming on tonight just briefly to kind of have a little chat here. And let's wind things down. We'll be back on here this week, folks. And if you missed us, we'll see you next time. And thanks again for watching or listening and subscribing to realdog.com. And again, this promo is still going on. If you buy 1 month, you get 2 free. And we will see you all later. Thank you. Thank you very much.